Now, good morning, Jay. How are you?
What's going on, guys? Sending two people to see the Rams and the Eagles? That's pretty good. You got going there.
Yeah. Sometimes, because you pick the game a long ways out and you take kind of what's available, that'll be a good game. That's a good pick right there.
That works.
So tonight it's the Eagles and the Giants.
Yes.
I'm very tired, Jay. I won't lie to you. I got about 3 hours. This could have been one of those ones at the start of the season. All right. Well, there's a bit of a robbery. Yeah. But, man, like we talked about the other day, Eli is washed, and the Giants, there's infighting and everything else there. On the other side, Philadelphia, they lose Jay Ajayi, and now very open talk about LeSean McCoy potentially going back. How much meat is on that bone?
I still think Le'Veon Bell's the guy that they end up moving for. They have inquired about both, and you know, they were on Bell sooner than McCoy. They didn't reach out for McCoy until Ajayi was lost for the year. Le'Veon Bell, those wheels were already in motion even before placing Ajayi on IR, because even prior to that, you know, Sproles has never really been healthy this year. Corey Clement's been banged up. Ajayi was dealing with a pretty serious back issue even before he tore his knee. And they're running Wendell Smallwood out there, you know, like way more than they thought. Like, he's a guy they figured would be a healthy scratch most of the time. So, yeah, they saw this coming prior to that. McCoy's been there before, and he makes, you know, less money, but he's also older, not as effective, and the Bills aren't shopping McCoy. You know, they'll trade him at the right price. I mean, Wayne Gretzky was traded, what, twice? I mean, yeah, if somebody completely goes overboard, they'll trade him, but they also know he's the only thing their quarterback has right now. I mean, they're putting a kid out there who they didn't think would be playing this soon, and they know they have no tight ends and no wide receivers and not much of an offensive line. So now you're going to take away Shady McCoy, too, for like a fifth-round pick or a fourth-round pick next year? Nah, that doesn't do it. Now, with the Steelers, you can't miss what you don't have, and they don't think he'd be welcome in their locker room. He might be more trouble than he's worth in Pittsburgh. And they're very much hoping, praying, doing, you know, dances that more teams call them and they can get something for Le'Veon Bell. The Eagles have plenty of cap space now. They could create a ton more of cap and cash by trading Nick Foles if they're able to do that. So I think the Eagles are certainly one of the primary teams to watch in these next 3 weeks ahead of the deadline. And I'm not convinced it's just for a running back. I think they want to upgrade their secondary. Well, I know they want to upgrade their secondary. Are they able to do it, and are they able to do it in a meaningful manner? We'll see, but there's an intent there.
Are you surprised to see the Vikings at 2-2-1?
I'm surprised at how they got there. That, you know, the two losses, their defense basically got shredded, you know, and that this is a team that if you would have told me before the season that the problem with the Vikings is that they're not going to be able to win in a shootout, I would have been like, well, no, wait a minute. That's exactly how, I mean, that they're built not to be in that situation. They've got an explosive offense and a top five defense. Well, they haven't had, you know, that top five defense has been very hit or miss. You know, they had a better game against the Eagles, but let's face it, the Eagles offense has been chronically sort of stuck in neutral this entire season. The return of Alshon Jeffrey gave him a bit of a boost, but they don't have a running back they can depend on. Their offensive line's looking long in the tooth. They've already benched their center. Their left tackle has been injured for years, and Peters isn't quite what he used to be. And Carson Wentz is still feeling his way back from a season-ending knee surgery. So I'm not ready to crown the Vikings defense off of that performance, but you do expect more from Mike Zimmer and that group, and you would tend to think that they've hit their low point and they'll get better from here. But they haven't been the same in their pass rush, and obviously Everson Griffin being away dealing with mental health issues is a part of that. And the secondary, the coverage just has been poor.
The Raiders playing the Seahawks this week at Wembley Stadium in London. There was a time where these games were really, really big deals, obviously with their own time slot and whatnot. But this one just seems to be going under the radar. Are these games still very important to the NFL?
Well, the playing them is. The outcome and how good the games are and let's face it, the teams that are there generally aren't very good because, well, Jacksonville's good now, but they stunk for years, and Jacksonville's over there every year. And then it's the teams that don't have a stadium, so the Raiders are trying, you know, Raiders are moving in the process of relocating, so the Raiders are going to have to play over there once a year in the meantime. And then you've got the two L.A. teams that are in limbo while they're waiting for their stadium to be constructed, so they'll be over there. It's not good. I mean, you don't want to be going from the West Coast to London. You'd like to avoid that. But I just think it's about maintaining incremental momentum there so that when we get to 2022 and the expiration of these TV contracts and the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement, that the NFL has its ducks in a row. So if that's the point where they, you know, where at least 24 owners think, we might make a lot more money in London than we make in Jacksonville, that they're ready to sit down and figure out, okay, how are we going to pay these players? Are they going to get paid in the pound sterling? Are they going to get paid in euros? Are they going to get paid in dollars? How are we going to handle exchange rates? How are we going to handle the tax ramifications of that? You know, you're going to have to get a buy-in to some degree, at least, from the union. And it makes sense to do all that at a time when you're already negotiating all these other macro issues.
You guys were talking about the Eagles making moves for running backs. We generally don't see a lot of trades happen in the NFL, but we've been hearing a lot of buzz coming toward this trade deadline. Are you hearing that GMs are a little more open to dealing this time rather than at times before?
I think as we continue to skew a little younger and some of the sort of old school, grizzled, you know, road scout model type GMs are replaced by younger, more analytically inclined, kind of more free-thinking GMs, I think it creates a climate where in-season trades are not nearly as difficult to consummate as they are in the past. But, I mean, look, the problem is, even 3 weeks from now when we get to Week 8, there'll be some teams with two or three wins who still are only a couple games out of a playoff spot. It's that, is there enough time to separate? Moving it from Week 6 to Week 8 was a step in the right direction. A lot of people would tell you Week 10, you really separate, you know, who's in it from who's not. You don't have to assume as much salary when you make these trades. You know, you're not paying half. You're paying a little less than half when you prorate, you know, the salaries you take on in trades. So I think there's ways to spur even more action, but I think there are a couple of teams. Like, you look at the Raiders, right? I mean, it's pretty clear that John Gruden doesn't think much of the GM. And the GM had a lot of high picks in recent years who Gruden doesn't like. Some other teams like those players coming out of college. John Gruden seems to be making a point of rubbing Reggie McKenzie's face in it. Like, a lot of teams are going to call the Raiders, who have, what, one win, and they are out of it, and say, we know you're gutting the whole thing anyway. You traded Khalil Mack for picks. Why don't you trade this guy? Why don't you trade that guy? You know, I think the Arizona Cardinals are a team to keep an eye on. The Rams look like they're are going to run away with that division. The Cardinals have a first-year coach who they just turned it over to a quarterback who they didn't think was ready, but they had to play him anyway. They're a ways away, and they haven't really torn that thing all the way down. So if Larry Fitzgerald feels like, you know what, it's been great to be a Cardinal my whole career, but I would like to get a ring, he'll find plenty of takers. You know, if there's other guys on that roster who they want to move, you know, and they've got some recent first-round picks from them who aren't playing much, yeah, I think you could see certain teams make multiple trades. And then the guy who always does the most at the deadline but lays in the weeds is Bill Belichick, and they obviously have areas of need also. So I feel like I say this every year, and then it's like Lucy, you know, with Charlie Brown and the ball. I talk to all these GMs, they get me all fired up, and then, you know, there's like one minor trade at the deadline. But I do think, especially with Howie Roseman and Philly being the position he's in, I think there's a chance to have some domino effects and some decent action over the next 3 weeks.
Jason Lackenfar is our NFL insider. Of course, game tonight, the Giants and the Eagles. You mentioned Bill Belichick. He's had a little bit of time to go to work on that offense out of Kansas City. That's going to be a fun one, the Sunday nighter. What do you see as, again, even going back to last week, what Mahomes threw a couple of picks, they still managed to put up 30 points and get the victory.
Yeah.
Can they do it in back-to-back weeks?
You know, he's not going to throw for four touchdowns and 400 yards every week. So we knew that. So, I mean, you can't compare him to the pace of the first 3 weeks because that was non-sustainable. He's been forced into more difficult situations the last 2 weeks, and he still made enough plays to win the game. You know, one of those picks sailed on him. I think he, you know, just kind of lost. I don't think he's played in the rain that much, and it was still raining at that part of the game, and I think that one just kind of got away from him. But I am interested to see him having to play from behind, and New England can quick strike you with their offense. And if the Chiefs have to finally chase a game, how does that look, and what does that bring out of Mahomes? And I'm sure that's exactly what Bill Belichick's thinking. And, you know, Kansas City's defense showed some signs of life against a horrible Blake Bortles on Sunday, but Tom Brady's a very different proposition. And Eric Berry's not going to play, and Justin Houston's not going to play with his hamstring issue. And Dee Ford's been great the last 3 weeks, but if he's the only guy you have to worry about, I tend to think Josh McDaniels will sell out to keep Dee Ford from wrecking his quarterback. So I feel like this is where the winning streak ends, which there's no shame in that. I mean, a lot of winning streaks have ended in Foxborough for a long time. But I think Belichick, with this much time to prepare and knowing Andy's offense the way he has over the years, I feel like this is the kind of game New England wins.
Bengals have a chance to kind of put a nail in a coffin over Pittsburgh at home. They got the team to do it?
They've got a good team. They do. It's just that the Steelers are like a vampire. Nobody ever, you know, that garlic necklace or that stake through the heart, it always seems to miss their heart and maybe like go through their arm instead. You know, every time you think you're ready to put that coffin in the ground, they get back up. And I think the way they responded to that Ravens loss and the way they just thoroughly dismantled the Atlanta Falcons on both sides of the ball, from first snap to last, I think they're kind of finding their mojo. And, you know, I'm still not sold on that Bengals offensive line. And the way that they started moving T.J. Watt around now, and you still have Cam Hayward there, even if Bud Dupree only shows up once a month, you know, I kind of feel like that defense is in a little better place than it was a couple weeks ago. And isn't this always the spot? Like, when you're ready to crown Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis, what happens?
Exactly, yeah. Well,
right? Yeah, they crap the bed, right? I mean, that's like, I mean, so every trend, everything I've known about these teams the last 10 years would tell me that this is one where Pittsburgh punches them in the face pretty hard. But we'll see. You know, we'll see that maybe this is a better Bengals team in some respects. But I feel like the Steelers now, they understand that they got a young, well, I should say young, they got a first-time offensive coordinator who basically was getting pushed around by Ben Roethlisberger for about 4 or 5 weeks. And some people in that building stepped in and said, Randy, if you keep throwing the ball 60 times a game because that's what the quarterback wants to do, we're not going to make the playoffs and you're going to get fired. And they finally ran the ball last week. They actually ran it quite a bit. There were times where Connor ran 5 times on the same drive. What a novel concept. So I think they're figuring some things out there.
Boomer had crushed the Bengals last week. Was his
we
week.
We talked about this the other day.
Did we let him know how bad you did?
Yes, we talked about it on Tuesday morning. Jeez. Thank you. God. Because while
I told you guys I like the Bengals in that spot, right?
I know you did, and I because I
badmouthed you about it.
I go opposite on you because it feels like every year we talk about the Bengals and we get a little bit excited, and then like you say, they get Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis, then they get punched in the mouth, and it's like, oh yeah, because they're the Bengals.
I will say this about that game though. I mean, they were getting, I can't say they were getting pushed around, but they were the lesser team to a bad Miami team for 3 quarters, you know. And then Tannehill did a couple of dumb things.
Yes.
And Miami had 2 really ridiculous personal fouls. Now, I give the Bengals credit. When Miami handed the game back to them, they took it and they kept it. They didn't give it back. But it took Miami handing the game to them. I liked the Bengals big last week, not so much about the Bengals, but just about, to me, Miami was fugazi, and they kind of knew that they were fugazi, and they had been exposed by the Patriots. And they're all looking around saying, yeah, we really weren't supposed to be 3-0, were we? I think they're figuring out who they are in a negative way. But look, the Bengals could win that division. I just don't know that they win this game.
Boom bought himself a Cleveland Browns hat. Is that a...
Yeah, he did.
Don't let Hugh Jackson know. Hugh Jackson doesn't want any bandwagon fans. You saw that? He was did he kick Snoop Dogg out of their practice or something like that? Or like, yeah, we don't need Snoop Dogg around here.
He's a bigger Brad Paisley fan, maybe.
Could be.
Yeah.
It could be that. Although, isn't Hugh, like, Hugh's from Long Beach, I think. Like, I would think Hugh's got love for Snoop Dogg, but maybe he's just like, we don't need a bandwagon now.
He just doesn't know how to deal with any kind of success, because he's never had any. He doesn't know. It's completely foreign to him.
He thought there were 2 seconds left in that game. Like, he legitimately thought, oh, man, what are we going to do with this kickoff? Meanwhile, it's like, bro, you played 9 minutes of an overtime. Like, each team's had the ball, like, 3 times. It's over. You won. Get used to it. Maybe.
Of all the guys to know the overtime rules, you think it'd be the coach who's been there half of the game.
Yeah. All you do is play overtime. And it's not like they play overtime games where it's like somebody returns the opening kickoff for a touchdown.
Right.
It's like, no, dude, you play deep into overtime. You had a tie like 2 weeks ago. Remember that?
It's funny, but it's true. Yeah. I mean, it is absolutely true. Yeah.
We talked about the Pittsburgh side of that game last week. What about Atlanta? 1-4. Are they just chalking it up to banged up like half of the secondary? That's it? Or are there some real problems here?
I mean, I think injuries are a big part of it. But, you know, if you're Arthur Blank and you've spent as much money as he spent the last 3 years trying to get over that hump for a Super Bowl, and you're paying Matt Ryan $30 million a year now, and you gave that coach and that GM like 4-year extensions to try to make everybody be all kumbaya and feel good coming into a year where your brand new glistening stadium is hosting the Super Bowl, and you're going to be sitting at the bye at week 8, probably looking up at the Tampa Bay Bucks in the standings. I don't think he wants to hear about, oh, if we just had our starting safeties, we'd be okay. No. They've given up 121 points in 3 weeks. They had 3 of their first 4 games at home, right? So you only play 8 home games. So 3 out of 8, that's almost half. And you're standing there at 1-4 at this point in the season, you got problems. I mean, they've got the Giants and the Bucks before they go on the bye, both at home. I think their best case is splitting that, and then you're sitting there at the bye, and I think Arthur Blank is firing some coordinators and rattling some chains and putting people on notice, because that's not what this team was supposed to be. I don't know. The offensive line is now starting to collapse. Some of those guys have ouchies and injuries. And if you put Matt Ryan under pressure, he's just a completely different quarterback. He just is. If you put Matt Ryan outside, you know, outdoors on the road, it's not nearly what it's like in the climate-controlled dome when it's completely quiet and you're on a fast track and Julio and Ridley and those guys can run all over the field. But there's going to be major changes there, I think, at the end of the year. And whether it's all-encompassing, I don't know. But that their season, to me, is effectively over. I don't know how much better it's going to get. And I think certainly they're going to have new coordinators next year. They might have a new coach. They might have a new GM. But that's an owner who traditionally is pretty – I mean, people don't know this about him, but he's pretty high-strung, and he has a lot of opinions, and he can be very difficult to manage. And he's kind of sat on his hands and bit his tongue going all the way back to that Super Bowl collapse. At some point, that all that fury is coming out, and I wouldn't want to be in the room when it does.
Great stuff this week, pal. We will we'll talk to you on whatever day, Monday, I suppose, and I'll be back. My picks will be – you'll be so proud of me.
I'm always proud of you guys.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you next
week.
Yeah.
Thanks.